Local News, Culture, and NPR.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, changes in the air and coming to the airwaves, we meet Kimberly Izar, our new Farm and Country show host.
You talk to people from all different walks of life, all different age groups, and I think that is really representative of your ability and openness to talk to lots of different people that make, you know, farming and agriculture and this area what it is. And I think that is something, hopefully, fingers crossed, that I'm able to preserve on the show.
All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk Report after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. Israel is warning Iran to stop its missile attacks. Hundreds were fired overnight, many intercepted, but some did hit Israeli neighborhoods. Three people were killed. Iran is retaliating for Israel's attack on its nuclear sites that killed more than 70 people, including top military brass. Iran's ambassador to the UN, Amir Saeed, spoke last night.
These atrocities constitute clear act of state terrorism and flagrant violation of international law.
President Trump is urging Iran to make a nuclear deal now. People protesting Trump's agenda and his push to expand presidential power are mobilizing in No Kings demonstrations across the U.S. today. Bruce Kahnweiser reports.
The president's critics will make their voices heard across the country today. Organizers expect millions to turn out at some 2,000 rallies across all 50 states. At least 40 rallies are expected across New Jersey and 90 more across New York. Critics say Trump is usurping his presidential authority, behaving more like a monarch. Trump created the DOGE agency that has gutted USAID, slashed experts from the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control. He's also tried to claw back funding for agencies and institutions that was already approved by the administration of former President Joe Biden in conjunction with a Republican Congress. He's waged political warfare against immigrants, and he sought to eviscerate Harvard's academic independence. For NPR News, I'm Bruce Kahnweiser in Greenbrook, New Jersey.
Tanks and soldiers, parachute jumps and flyovers, all in store for today's military parade in D.C., marking the Army's 250th anniversary. It comes the same week Trump federalized National Guard troops and mobilized Marines in L.A. More than a month after a federal judge halted part of Trump's executive order related to voting, a second judge has ruled more of it needs to be paused, too. NPR's Miles Parks has this report.
The decision from District Court Judge Denise Casper affirmed a pause on maybe the most controversial part of Trump's executive order on voting, the section that would force people to provide a document that proves their citizenship if they register to vote using the National Registration Form. That provision was blocked as part of a different lawsuit in April. But this injunction goes further. It also stops the government from enforcing a part of the order that sought to punish states that have forgiving rules about accepting mail ballots. Judge Casper noted in her order that the Constitution does not grant the president power over elections, instead giving that power to the states and to Congress. Miles Parks, NPR News, Washington.
A shelter-in-place order was issued this morning northwest of Minneapolis. It covers a three-mile radius in Brooklyn Park, where police are searching for a suspect in what they call multiple targeted shootings. They say he may be misrepresenting himself as a law enforcement officer. You're listening to NPR News.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Kimberly Izar.
Pick up a little dirt and get ready to toss it. Ready? Okay. Ready? One, two, three, go.
County officials and community leaders picked up their shovels and construction hats to mark the kickoff of Sullivan County's $30 million broadband project that'll connect over 22,000 homes and small businesses to high-speed internet. The initiative is expected to bring broadband services throughout the county by the end of 2026. Sullivan County Legislature Chair Nadia Raj said that this project gives the county the same access to high-speed internet as any other city, but in a rural community.
Many spots throughout Sullivan County are not served by anything broadband. There's no internet service to the majority of this county, sometimes even without any wires. The future is here, so let's get started.
The project marks the single largest broadband investment in Sullivan County's history. While the county will own the infrastructure, Archtop Fiber, an internet and phone service provider in the Hudson Valley, will serve as the internet provider. Sean Bakai, co-founder of Archtop Fiber, explained the details behind the public and private partnership.
What it's going to be is 220 miles of fiber optic that is really future-proofed. We're using a high-count fiber, as much as 864-count fiber, all underground, so it's going to be incredibly resistant to the spicy Sullivan County winters and ice storms.
Bakai says Archtop Fiber is looking to have a shovel in the ground by August 1st. In Bethel, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, supporting creative people and effective institutions committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information is at macfound.org.
What you're witnessing in California is a full-blown assault on peace, on public order.
The mostly peaceful protests in L.A. reframed as riots, leading to the exceedingly rare domestic use of the military by a president.
But you need to have some express legal authorization in order to deploy troops. You can't just say, this looks like chaos to me, so I'm going to bring in the military.
On this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Friday will be the summer solstice, the day when the sun reaches its most northern point for the year. Even though the summer solstice actually refers to the moment when the sun reaches its peak in the sky for the year, we refer to the day in which this occurs as the summer solstice. Derived from two Latin words, sol, meaning sun, and sestire, meaning to stand still, the term solstice describes what the sun appears to do. If one were to observe the maximum height of the sun each day during the weeks leading up to the summer solstice, one would notice that the sun climbs higher and higher in the sky until it comes to a stop on the summer solstice. The summer solstice is the longest day of the year, and on Friday, we will see 15 hours and 14 minutes of sunlight. Those living north of the Arctic Circle will see 24 hours of sunlight today, and anyone south of the Antarctic Circle will not see the sun at all. For those living on the Tropic of Cancer, 23.5 degrees north of the equator, the sun will be directly overhead at noon. Cultures from around the world have celebrated the solstice for millennia. The solstice marked the start of the new year in the ancient Egyptian calendar. It was a time of social equality in ancient Greece, and the Sioux tribe held rituals honoring the sun on the solstice. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Welcome back to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. I'm your host, Rosie Starr, in our Liberty Studios, and I'm here because I'd like to introduce you to Kimberly Izar, a recent and welcome production journalist to the Radio Catskill staff and the new Farm and Country show host. Perhaps some of you may have heard her talented work in the past few months. If not, it's all available on our website, wjffradio.org. Some of the topical subjects Kimberly has addressed locally are how young farmers are coping with the federal funding freeze, Bhutanese immigrants in Pennsylvania, long COVID, a medical condition that's currently growing in our community. Kimberly was on the scene on Trout Day in Roscoe along the Beaverkill and Willowemoc Rivers. She's going deep into our community to meet with a diversity of people that add color and fun to our lives. Some of my favorites are her audio postcards on location at Mid-Hudson Misfits in Accord, New York, Queer Soup Night, and the Korean Farm Brewery. Kimberly, welcome to Farm and Country. Please say hello to our audience. And if you would like to give us a bit about your background that led you to the Radio Catskill airwaves.
Hi, Rosie. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Of course. And that was such an exceptional introduction, I might say. You know, obviously, I've been on Radio Catskill for a few months now, and it's just fun to hear all of the different stories that I've been able to work on here.
Well, Kimberly, I admired you from the first day that I met you. I noticed a very compassionate, intelligent person, and I'm so happy that you're going to be part of this very important show for Radio Catskill and Farm and Country. I'm sure you have lots of ideas that you're going to pursue. I know when we were prepping for this show, we agreed that some of our radio production is very tedious. It's intensive and time consuming. And speaking for myself, it's a labor of love, and we're able to offer quality radio production that's locally produced for our listeners.
It really is. And, you know, before we hopped in the studio, we were talking a little bit more about just figuring out what would make it fun for the listener, because I think from a reporter's end, it's so much fun talking to people. And sometimes even I get lost in the conversation. I'm sure you actually have maybe that same problem, that you end up getting lost in the conversation. And then you look at the clock and you look at your field recorder and you're like, oh my goodness, it's been almost 45 minutes. How am I going to cut this down to actually 10 minutes? But I think that's the fun sometimes in journalism and public radio. But to go back to your question about, you know, what brought me here to the Catskills, I think before we talk about what brought me to journalism, it might just be helpful to talk a little bit more about my background, because I think it shapes how I see the world and how I tell stories, ultimately. So a little bit about me. My family is from Muñoz in the Philippines, which is in the northern part of the country in Luzon. It's the largest island in the Philippines. And I think when people think of the Philippines, they think of one of two things, right? It's either A, they think of Manila, which is this like big city. It's bustling. There's lots of people. It's like stimulation overload, or they think of these very pristine, secluded beaches. But where my mother grew up as a kid was actually pretty similar to the Catskills, in the sense that it was the countryside. She grew up with her father and her two younger siblings on a rice farm, actually. And her father sold and bought rice in addition to raising pigs and chickens, you know, for their own consumption, as well as also cultivating corn and beans. And I think that when my mom immigrated to the U.S. in the 80s, through no fault of her own, that connection to land kind of disappeared. And we, again, through no fault of her own, became very acclimated to this Western ideology of individualism, mass consumption, city living. And I think it was only in the last maybe 5 to 7 years where I started craving the need and importance of connecting the dots to my own heritage, but then also to where I live and who shapes it, and always wanting to look at it from a community-oriented lens. So that's kind of how I found myself in journalism, which, you know, we can talk a little bit more about. But I wanted to talk to people who live and work in a place, because that ultimately is who shapes a community.
Mm-hmm. Well, you really are in the right place here in the Catskills. I have to say, from my experience in the last 10 or 11 years, the farming community is, it's royalty in my mind. It's, I have the ultimate respect for farmers.
And it's something that, you know, I've only, I'm new to the area. I joined, moved up to the region to join the Radio Catskill team, and which was about 3 months ago, which is wild to say that it's been that amount of time. And that was something that struck me immediately when, you know, we talked about how I was there during opening day for trout season, and many people don't know, but my car actually got stuck in the mud. And the amount of people that checked in on me to not only make sure I was safe, but try to help me yank out my car, I think just is one, such a funny welcome and introduction, but I think really speaks to the strong sense of community here.
Well, I also learned in traveling with my microphone over the farm and country landscape that a neighborly attitude in the community is very much part of farm life. They help each other out no matter what's happening. Each farm in each location helps each other out. What should we talk about here? What do you want to hear? What do we want to hear from each other right now?
I mean, I would love to hear more about some of your favorite stories. You have been such a such an important platform for farming and agriculture here in the Catskills region and Upper Delaware Valley area. And I'd love to hear just more about some of the favorite memories that stick out for you.
Well, I really honestly can say I cannot just choose one or a handful of favorites, because all of my guests are on the same level. I have such a respect for everything that I've done. But what stands out in my mind are the experiences that I had that really touched my senses. I'm a city girl. Yes, it's true. And my background has always been in radio, listening to radio and working in radio. And when I came here, I was just handed the baton for farm and country, and you'll be fine. You'll figure it out. And the way I figured it out is I went outside my comfort zone, thinking outside the box, and relied on the expertise of everyone that I spoke to.
Wow.
And some of those people, like Leroy and Jennifer Canfield, they hay farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Jennifer keeps horses, and she spoke about the daily challenges of sheltering horses, and she exposed me to the experience of a meditative state being around very large animals in their stillness. And then Leroy Canfield, he harvests the hay that feeds their horses, and he invited me to sit on his and drive his Massey Ferguson tractor that pulls.
What
the
was that? Okay, I need to hear more details about that. What was that like? Because I don't think I've been in that situation yet.
Well, I have to say, if someone offers you that opportunity, please take them up on it.
Okay.
Because you learn a whole language, what a tether is, a square baler, the fact that hay has to be a certain quality of dryness for horses to get their nutrition. And then there's that beautiful scent of a fresh crop of hay, and the texture has to be dry in order for the horses to get their nutrition. But in addition to that, it's like regardless of the weather or atmospheric changes, challenges, farmers have to be ready for all of it. I remember being with Charles Wilkin. He's a beekeeper. And with my microphone, I went in to inspect the hive dressed in a full white suit head to toe. And the bees were humming, and my microphone picked it up. And the taste of the honey was just, the aroma in the taste of the honey was just so sensual. I fell in love with bees, the sound of them.
Wow.
And the taste of fresh honey. And then going to Apple Pond Farm with Sonia Hedlund and Dick Reisling, before their tornado, they kept all kinds of farm animals. Sonia would produce wool from sheep, and she kept goats for cheese. And Dick, you know, he taught everyone. He had a renewable education energy center, and he had solar and wind alternatives to fossil fuels. And people, it was a real educational experience going to their farm. A while back, I met Brent Habig. He's a Wayne County farmer, and he has a Two Creek. His farm is called Two Creek Regenerative Farm. And I went with my microphone recorder and attended one of his seasonal pasture tours, which was very exceptional. He is a person that thinks globally and acts locally. He has a great perspective on restoring the ecosystem by emulating nature. The animals run freely in the pasture. The pigs, they root around in their woodland habitat, and all the animals are treated with respect and live in family groups. And he has an Airbnb that's a treehouse.
Oh, wow.
Boy, if you want to experience something really wild with a ladder that climbs up but doesn't even touch the ground, but but one of the highlights in the most recent years was interviewing by phone Barbara Yeaman. She was just about to turn 100, and I interviewed her because at the age of 70, she founded the Delaware Highlands Conservancy, which is now in Beach Lake, Pennsylvania. But she taught me that the power of the individual in terms of what person can accomplish is very important. And then she taught me a great tool: get in touch with your inner clown. That's one of the best.
I love that.
Yeah. And there's lots of local talent here, right, in our community, very reliable. You'll never be without sources of good information. Jeffrey Rose, who's in Coshecton, New York, he has he grows heirloom varieties in his greenhouse, and he's just a very remarkably talented person. He speaks so well, and he's friendly. And like yourself, I was at the opening day in trout season one year, and the most remarkable situation, I found myself sitting on a bench in the school's gymnasium chatting with Trout Unlimited fly fisher folk. They fly fished and made bamboo cane rods. I knew nothing about this subject, and they were so willing to sit with somebody that knew nothing, and they filled me in on the most interesting idea of fishing with these.
That is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
So beautiful.
And then, like yourself, I don't know if you've had the experience yet to go out and be around children. I went to the trout release day when the fifth graders in Jeffersonville here, they released the trout into the Calicoon Creek. Oh, it's an audio postcard that's pure radio bliss.
Wow.
And then most recently, I went to the Western Sullivan Public Library and sat with the junior master gardeners. They're age 6 to 9, and they learn about plant growth from seed to harvest. And they go inside the Tustin Heritage Community Garden and get their hands dirty and play with shovels and worms. And oh, my gosh, 2 hours of audio.
Wow.
Melting down to 15 minutes.
It is a struggle. I definitely hear that. And, you know, I was actually listening to Farm and Country earlier this month and was listening to the master seed gardeners at the library. And one of the things that I love about Farm and Country is that you talk to people from all different walks of life, all different age groups. And I think that is really representative of your ability and openness to talk to lots of different people that make, farming and agriculture and this area what it is. And I think that is something, hopefully, fingers crossed, that I'm able to preserve on the show.
Oh, I'm sure you'll do fine because you seem to have the intelligence and open mind. You have a friendly, eager approach. And farmers definitely, they want to tell their story. They need to tell their story. They are so important. I mean, it was very obvious during COVID how the food chain security was being threatened and still is.
Right.
There's 8 billion people on this planet and they all need food. And farmers are there 24/7, 365. They have to know biology, science. They have to know animal behavior. They have to know everything. And I really admire them. And they like to share their knowledge.
And it's also rural and farmland is actually the majority of the country. I'm not sure of the specific percentage, but I think it's like 95 or 97%. Of the United States is actually rural land. So even though the majority of the population might be living in urban parts of the country, the United States is actually majority rural. And I think a lot of people don't realize mm-hmm. that or know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say this year, 2025, marks Radio Catskill's 35th anniversary. And I've been so impressed by the growth and changes over the years. I've been listening to Radio Catskill since they went on the air from day one. And now there's lots of challenges brought on by the current administration. But here we are growing. We're in liberty, holding steady, and thanks to our listeners' financial support and trustworthy decisions made by the Radio Catskill staff. This has allowed our farming country team to invite talented people like you, Kimberly. And also, let's put in a word for Ronald Kelson. I met Ronald a while ago, and I always noticed that he has this reliable technical skills, which are extremely important to radio broadcasting. So it's a fresh crop of radio production for Radio Catskills Farm and Country. Should we have Ronald say hello and introduce yourself and say a bit about your background, Ronald?
Hello. For those who don't know, my name is Ronald Kelson. At the top of the year, I was hired as the radio operations and production coordinator here, and I'm a lifelong resident of the area. I grew up in Sullivan County, and I've been living in Bloomingburg pretty much my whole life, except for 2 lost years in Monticello. No, I love the area. I've always, you know, been an admirer of nature, an admirer of the wonderful area and the opportunities it presents here. And I'm couldn't be more excited to be working on the show with you guys.
Well, that's a nice fit for sure, because you have Definitely. The technical skills and the ability to learn and the sensitivity for nature that we all have. And that's very important because we are really blessed to be in this beautiful farm and country landscape of sunsets, and whether the winters are severe or not, c'est la vie. Whether it rains a lot, you know, it's the birds are chirping and the sunsets are gorgeous and the rainbows. And
it's a blessing. It really is.
Yeah, it's a gift to be here. I look forward to being part of all of you, and I'm so happy for our audience that they've got this fresh crop of new energy to the show. They really deserve it.
Oh, that's so sweet, Rosie. And I think maybe just one thing I'll add or note is that, you know, it might be a different voice that folks might be hearing on Saturdays, but the essence of what I think makes Farm and Country so special, which is real local conversations with people who tend to the land, that's not changing.
Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to introduce you both. And I'd like to thank the audience for listening. This has been Rosie Starr, and just keep in touch with Radio Catskill. Our website is wjffradio.org, and see you around farm and country land.
The so-called One Big Beautiful Bill is making huge changes to healthcare, not necessarily to increase healthcare access, but as cost savings and cost cutting to pay for other things.
Most of the items in the bill that increase spending are related to like taxes and immigration, and healthcare is kind of being used as a way to pay for those things.
That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear from the Marco Polo Adventurers, the Waikiki Seven, and the new Les Baxter Orchestra. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me with the music.